This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have us on the line this evening, Jude Doty, and we're going to be talking about education and homeschooling. And you know, so many of our young people today, after they finish going through the government schools, come out at the far end. They're quite illiterate in many instances. The graduates of our high schools in America, when competing in tests with graduates of high schools throughout the rest of the world, we are down at the bottom of the heap. I mean, we're way below Lithuania and Latvia and countries already sort of bordering on third world. How could you do such a bad job unintentionally? Well, we can argue whether it was intentional or not, but the important thing is, what can we do to remedy the situation? Can we try to improve the education of the schools? And I don't think so. I mean, I've been at this game for 43 years, tried, ran for school board, done everything imaginable. A lot of people have just broken their hearts trying to do something about the educational system because they're concerned about the children, because they're our future, and nothing we do seems to help, because the other side has fantastic amounts of money behind them. They have tremendous power. They have the great tax-exempt foundations. They have the unions, the National Educational Association. They control the school boards across America. So what's the alternative? Well, let's go to our special guest this evening, Mr. Jude Doty. How are you this evening?
Hello there. Fine.
Why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself, who you are, and how you got involved in this whole idea of this program of homeschooling?
Yes, we've been homeschooling from the get-go. We have 7 children. I'm just in a private contracting business up here in Washington State. But we, in fact, home birth our children, and we homeschool.
And, of course, you got into real trouble with the local government officials because you dared to homeschool your children.
It's hard to understand exactly why they all came against me like they have. But and a lot of it was probably connected with the work that I do. I'm a self-employed, you know, contractor here in Washington State. But I got over $120,000 worth of fines in the last year and a half it's been, for having my children with me on the workplace. In fact, that was on my own property.
So you weren't taking them out on commercial jobs. You just had them helping you when you were working on your own property?
Well, I move and set up houses for myself, and I sell them off every year, and that's what I do for a living. I'm a house mover. But I buy a lot. I get an older home that has to be relocated, has to be moved. And I put the lot and the older home together, and I move about 20 or 30 homes a year. But back in January of 2003, I got a $34,000 fine for having my children with me. They only realized my boys were with me 4 days in that month, which is about common. Usually about 1 day a week I would have my boys with me, but when I had activities that they could help me on. But the state has come up with an incredible position. They claim that if a parent allows their child to do any appreciable work, it's employment. And that's how I ended up with the first $34,000 of the fines. Since then, it's been growing and growing. They've added another 130 to it since then.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Mr. Jude Doty, who's actually homeschools his children. He has them help him occasionally on various jobs he does. And yet, of course, the government seems to have taken a, well, more or less targeted him to make an example out of him. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest. Well, our guest this evening is Jude Doty, and he lives out. You live in the state of Washington, don't you?
Yes, Central Washington, Yakima, Washington.
All right, fine. Well, have you continued to have the children there, or did you just wouldn't it be easier just not to have them with you, you know, while you're doing these jobs, so that it won't give them the opportunity to obviously target you?
The idea of apprenticing your youth has been around for forever. We all want to mentor our own youth, you know, and have them keep our own values. So, but the state is saying that if you allow your children to be with you on a work site and do any appreciable work, in fact, they made the example of retrieving a hammer for the parent. They say that would constitute employment. But we know that when they're not running with their parents, they're running with other peer, you know, influences and activities, which are much more greater risk, and they're destructive to the home.
Well, now, how old are these children that are with you on the job?
At the time when I got these citations, they were 13 and 11. And now they're 15 and 13.
Well, of course, it sounds like what you're running up against is just a bureaucracy that has an agenda. And, of course, wouldn't it be easier just simply to say, well, you know, we're just not going to do this for the time being until we can get this thing straightened out so they can't keep lodging more fines against you? So,
you know, at the time, I didn't realize was what I was running up against when they gave me the first threats to keep my children away from my work site, which was my own personal property. Again, I owned that property. But we realized how necessary it was to have my boys with me a day or two a week. And at the same month, virtually just a few months, just maybe the month before that, another contractor here in the city got the same threat to keep his children away. He had two boys about a year older than my two sons. Less than 2 years later, one of his boys was dead. He totally cut off contact with his boys at the workplace, and they started running with other peers. And that's the influence that we do not want. We want to be their mentor. We want to have that, you know, that influence over our children while they're in their young ages.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that point of view. It just sounds to me like you have government bureaucrats who are trying to be as officious as possible. They have an agenda. And do you think it's possibly because you're homeschooling your children that they object to that? Or what is their real incentive? You would think they would have more important things to do than tracking down a house mover with a couple of children there helping them.
They said that homeschooling parents are not bona fide to train their children in occupational activities. They used the word bona fide. In fact, in their own brief, when they said that, they also contrasted that the same work, they said, would be permitted if it was for the school district because they're nonprofit. So they could do the same thing for the school district. In fact, you can be 9 years old in this state, and you can do flagging at a street corner for the school district. But you can't be 13 years old and retrieve a hammer for your own parent on your own property.
We'll be back in just a moment here and discuss this issue. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is with us is Jude Doty, who actually is a house mover. He lives up in the state of Washington, and he has how many children is this? Seven?
We have seven children.
Seven children, and of course, two of the older boys will help him from time to time during the course of the week. And this is not an everyday issue, is it?
No, about one day a week, maybe two. They would go with me.
All right. And so, basically, they have government officials up there who really, of course, seem to have targeted him more or less. How did they even know what you were doing? In other words, are they out driving up and down the streets? Did somebody report them? Or were they simply watching you?
It's hard to know that for sure. I know moving a house is quite out in the public, moving a house down the road. So that's quite out in the public. But the same inspectors can see also other youth flagging traffic in the public at the age of 9 without any adult supervision, and they don't take note of that. They don't care for that, for the school district. They don't consider that as employment. But what if they succeed on making this their precedent, that they consider any appreciable work for a parent employment, that will redefine the American family.
Well, of course, but that's the whole purpose. They want to redefine the American family, and the last thing they want is homeschooling parents, and certainly parents that are keeping a good close eye on the children. They want to get those kids into school where they can get their sex education and their suicide education and their death education, and where they'll come out as, you know, as dumb as a cucumber. There is a social agenda out here. I don't think most Christians, most people really realize what's going on, but there really is an effort to disrupt and destroy the American family, and obviously you have some bureaucrats that are going right along with that. Now, have you actually had an opportunity to go to court and have a trial on this, or what has actually happened?
Now, the only way they succeed here in the state labor and industry is they keep you out of court. They tie you up in the administrative process. We've been there for 2 years and 3 months now, over 2 years and 2 months at least. And they've seized all of our assets. They seized over $1 million of assets and sold them.
Now, how could they seize your assets? In other words, were these for fines or what?
I got $130,000 of the fines at one point, then another $34,000. You can go at the website, familiesthatwork.org, and look at our website with the fight with labor and industry. But the problem is they keep you in their administrative clutches, and they can just destroy you in that process and keep you there for years and keep you out of this county superior court.
But, Jude, that's the way the system is set up, and until the system is changed, they will continue doing that. I know people, they've taken their children away from them, and as long as they can keep you away from a jury, as long as they can keep you away from a legitimate court, have you challenged their authority in this? Do you have a lawyer who knows how to go about that? Because there are certainly situations where you can actually say, I don't want to be tried in this sort of court. Have you actually got a lawyer who understands this sort of a system? Because if you don't, why, they'll simply tear you apart.
And that's no doubt their process. Now, I have spent $50,000 on legal fees in the last 2 years. We are now, even though we haven't got to the county superior court yet, we will on Monday be filing a large suit in the federal court here in our city. We're taking the offensive action now against the state and against the city of Yakima, who's joined them in this endeavor. We found their own emails that was written about a year ago that said their objective was to drive me out of business, out of my home, and out of state.
All right, fine. Well, how did you get those emails?
We have made numerous. I've made over 15 or so requests for records to the state and about the same number to the city. We've got just scads of them. In fact, the response to email that they said they have been successful and they're glad they've been successful and they've reached their objective. Right now, tonight, I am in my home. I came back to my home even though we've been court ordered out of this house. We moved out in the last 2 days. We're living in an RV, but I had the phone still in my name here, so that's where I'm at tonight.
All right, Jude. Well, of course, you have to, of course, get a lawyer and sue them in federal court, and I'm so glad, but I hope you have a lawyer who will stand behind you and won't simply undercut you, as so many of them will. Now, there are wonderful lawyers out there, who really understand the system and know how to make it, give you true justice. Unfortunately, once you get into the administrative system, why, of course, they will go after you, because there are wicked and nasty and evil people working within our government. It's hard to realize that, but power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so now you're going to, of course, go into the federal court, and at least there, why, you can probably get a much better opportunity. I mean, there is so much corruption up there. I'm sure you know my friend Robbie Roberson. Robbie, he was in Wenatchee.
Yes.
And, you know, the whole legal system there was totally corrupt. And, of course, he was thrown into prison along with, I think, 25 or more other people on the idea of they were involved in child sexual abuse. And it was all contrived. And the judges eventually knew it, and the people in the prisons knew it, but they sent him into prison hoping he'd be killed. And it was this, I don't know if you've talked to him, but
yes,
it was the Spanish prisoners there that actually protect him from being killed. They intended to have him killed in prison. And what was his crime? He was a minister and had stood up for these people who had been falsely charged. Well, eventually he was able to work that out, and they have. I hope he ends up owning Wenatchee, because he won a number of major lawsuits against him. He got all of those people out of prison. You've talked to Ruby, haven't you?
Yes, I have. We visited a number of times.
So you're up against the same sort of domestic corruption, but you have this sort of old boy system every place, and there are good people in the system. And there's nothing they can do about it. I know he told me about a one man there who was an investigator, worked for the city, who literally fled to Canada to protect his life because he knew the corruption, wanted to speak out against it, and was afraid to.
You know, the family will always be the single greatest competitor to the state for the loyalty of this, you know. And they do not like strong families because they're more loyal, children are more loyal oftentimes to their own families than the state system. But when they can destroy the family network, people become sheep to the state and they just bow down and they pay their homage. But they've never liked our ethics and our strong family unit that we stand for.
Well, it sounds to me, if you've got those emails, that you can actually get them from conspiracy.
Yes, and we've got a lot of more. Yeah, we've just got all. They refer to me actually in their own messages as an antichrist and as a Satanist. We've got that record. But, and a number more. The things are just unbelievable, but they've been out to destroy me, and we've survived it for 2 years. In fact, right now, we're at a real crossroads right now. We've just been put out of our home in the last 3 days.
Well, of course, have they seized this under one guise or another because you haven't paid the fines or what?
Now, the home act was a little bit different because of when they seized $130,000 of my cash bond that I had posted for doing house moving, I could not work anymore. I could not keep my license. So that's what put me out of work. And
How did they seize the money that you put up in the bonds? Was this for a bond so they didn't go to prison or what?
I post bonds in the cities and states and county here for moving a house down the street.
Oh, I see. Fine. So you posted these bonds so you could do your work. How did they get by seizing that? Was that they said that they were charging you because you were using your children in your work or what?
Right. That was the only cause. And they seized all the bonds that I had. They seized all of my property. They seized 18 different properties I had. It's all been sold. It was in sheriff's sales. What they haven't sold, I've lost because I was not able to make payments on a number of different things. But then they seized my both bank accounts and all of my bonds. They just totally put me out of service. They took title to all of my equipment.
All right. Now, basically, have you gotten any help? Do you have a church up there you go to?
Yes, we do. I'm sorry to say the Christian Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which we were a member of, would not stand with me on this case. They looked the other way.
All right. Now, what about any of the local churches? Would they help you at all?
There's been a lot of attention. No one has come forward here in the city, and it's been a lot of attention. I've been on the front page of the paper probably 50 times in the last 2 years here.
Well, what about the papers? The paper giving you a fair?
No, very critical, very critical. The Yakima Herald, we was on the front page of the Seattle Times last July, and that was a favorable report, a good report. There again, if people want to go to our website, they can look at numerous reports. WorldNet Daily made a real good report, and many others have. But if you go to familiesthatwork.org, you can see, and you can link to different news articles that's been published on this story.
Well, do you have any sort of a fund or legal fund that people, if they wanted to contribute, they could send money to help you?
We have received right at $2,000 over the last couple months. I've been on 5 other radio talk shows, and that's all it's been. But naturally, that has not been enough to keep me out of Dutch. But we know God is faithful. He's going to take us to the end. Our confidence has been in the Lord through this whole thing. He is a good God. He knows where He's leading us. He is faithful. And we keep our head focused on Christ alone. We're very hopeful. We're very, very, very hopeful.
Well, now, of course, then, you are going into federal court, and you are actually suing the local officials. I hope you're going to sue them individually, because they can be sued, you know, if they are involved in a conspiracy.
Yes, we're naming nearly 50 of them individually. Besides the entity, the government entities.
Why would they ever give you those emails? I mean, where they actually talk about this among themselves? Or was it perhaps somebody that wanted to help you and allowed you to get that information?
Well, they withheld them for over a year and a half, and we kept on fighting and fighting. I made more requests for records, and I just kept on persisting on a lot of different things. And you know, a lot of them have come through. Number one, we've gotten probably 3,000 or 4,000 emails. And they have briefed a lot of them. I know that held a lot of them back that is more destructive, but we've got our hands on a lot of good information right now, a very lot.
Well, of course, if you can get into a federal court and you can get an honest judge and get an honest jury, you could probably end up owning most of Yakima there, at least I would hope so. I hope you're going to go after, monetary damages, because that's the only way you're really going to get, the attention of the taxpayers are going to have to put out the money. And you hate to do this, but sometimes when you're dealing with dishonest, unscrupulous, and what it sounds like, frankly, evil people who have targeted you because they don't like what you represent, why, of course, at that point, you're going to have to go after them monetarily, which is what Pastor Roddy Roberson did over Wenatchee. And, you know, it's such a shame that the good people in the state of Washington have allowed the evil people to take over. But, well, I think this has really happened all across the country. We're going to be back here in just a moment. And welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jude Doty. And, of course, it's an amazing, amazing story. I've heard similar stories, though, from all across the country, but never, of course, going after somebody because they had children working for them, their own children, on their own property. So, basically, is there an address, or how would people actually get in touch with you if they did want to help?
You know, we will post a new post office box on our website, hopefully tomorrow. We're kind of living in an RV right now, our family of nine. And so I will get a post office box tomorrow. We haven't got that. We've been under a lot of pressure. We had to move. We have a nice, beautiful, large home. You can see the home, in fact, on our website. And so we've been occupied with just getting out of the home. In fact, we got all of our stuff set out on the lawn right now.
How could they sell the home with saying that you owed them more money?
Well, the reason we lost the home actually was a forfeiture. The loan company foreclosed on a debt. We had borrowed on our last project. I had borrowed $250,000 on my own home. I had just signed a project 2 years ago when I got in trouble with labor and industry for moving 18 homes. And I borrowed money to do this project against my own property. And then they totally destroyed that project. We lost it all. It all went away. But then it also cost me my own home.
Well, of course, you are a legitimate home mover. Why would they come after you as far as doing the home moving business? Or was there some other problem with that?
No, it's just in reference to using my boys on the work site. And it's not even so much as using them. It's having them with their father. It's mentoring. It's discipling. It's being a father. It's basically being a father and caring for your own children. So, again, as I say, told you before, they do not care that they work. They could do the same work for the school district. Or they can be 9 years old and get community services in the court system. So it's not, and they're actually building houses in all the school districts around here at a young age. But it's not about the work. It's about they have a problem. They don't like the family. They don't like fathers in control teaching the Christian work ethic. Their Protestant work ethic has been around forever. They have problems with that.
Well, what sort of things did they talk about in these emails that you have where they're communicating with one another about how successful they are?
In fact, they mentioned the fact, because I have my children with me, I am uncompetitive in the labor market, and it was their responsibility to level the playing field. They wrote that. They said no one else in the Yakima area can compete against Doty because of his children, and it was their responsibility to level the playing field, so that's why they wanted to shut me down for child labor violations. But, you know, we have statutory law in our state that totally excludes the parent-child relationship as all of the employment standards. And that is also law in the federal level. There is statutory law, and we have case law in this state. There were three times it went to the Supreme Court in the state of Washington, and they said unless the child is emancipated with a written contract, it will not be employment between a parent and child. There can never employment exist unless the youth is emancipated with a written contract. Now, them conditions have been upheld three times in our high state Supreme Court. And yet, the problem is they keep you in their administrative court process, and that's where they strangle you. And hopefully you'll never get into before a jury of your peers in a county or, a state court or a federal court.
Well, now, of course, there are ways to avoid getting into the administrative court. At the very, very beginning, obviously, your lawyer wasn't aware of that. But, I know that certainly Wayne Hayes had taken on the federal government. And had he ever gotten into the regular courts, he would have lost. His lawyer understood this. They insisted on a special federal court. And he won a massive settlement against the federal government, one of the first persons ever to take him on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jude Doty, and we're talking about his trouble that he's having. And I would caution our listeners out there, do not get involved in the administrative courts, because there is no justice in them. This is a system that has been set up which is to keep you away from a trial by jury. And, of course, the fact that this is being used, and is being used illegally by municipalities to actually target people, you know, we have to get back to the rule of law, not the rule of man. And this is what we have in so many communities. Well, our telephone number, if you'd like to talk to Jude, if you have a question or comment, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But remember, there but for the grace of God go I. This can happen to any one of you out there when the government decides to target you. And when they do, of course, they will make your life as miserable as they possibly can, because as many times you will have people who get these government jobs who think that somehow they are above the law. They no longer have to answer to the same laws that other people do, and this really is a frightening thing to contemplate, and yet it's not that uncommon. Have you talked to other people? You mentioned another house mover in your area who got into the same sort of a problem, Jude?
No, the other man was a developer, and he got threatened to keep his voice off the site, but the problem, and he complied. I was not so compliant in that issue, and it was on his own property also, but he was more compliant. But what happened, his youth started running with other youth, other peers, and that's where one of them lost their life about a little over a year later in a plain Russian roulette. It is dangerous to separate youth from their fathers. It's very high risk.
So, well, it certainly is in the world we live in today, and especially up in Washington, where you really do have so much corruption.
Every year, there's about 53 youth get killed in an accidental injury at work, but there's over 10,000 at the same age group under the age of 18. They get killed in other sporting and playing activities. Over 10,000 non-work-related accidental deaths, when only 53 work-related accidental deaths. So work is a safe place. The U.S. Department of Labor claims that there is nowhere safer that they know of than work for a youth, for young youth that we work in, including going to school or playing in football. You know, football alone some years has taken out over 60 deaths. Football alone. But sporting is not near safe, but work is where youth belong, especially with their fathers.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, when would you actually be going into the federal court?
I think it will be filed here on Monday.
It's going to be filed. You know, you don't actually have a court date.
Right. But now we have tried three times to get the administrative issue with labor and industry moved into the county superior court, and all three times they have argued against this and say, no, you must exhaust more administrative remedies. And yet that's their only way they ever can succeed. Every year, as I told you, there's about 10,000 citations in our state a year from labor and industry. Only 16 a year make it to a county superior court to get out of that
process. The thing is that they do not want an honest trial. This, is, I think, is a reflection of the fact that they know that what they're doing is both immoral and wrong. And we're guaranteed under our Constitution the right to a trial and to a trial by jury, especially if they're going to obsess you with fines of this magnitude and, of course, drive you out of your occupation. So, you know, I would think that you would have an opportunity, a justification for tremendous, compensation from them, for what has happened. Now, why did it take so long to think about getting into the federal court?
I don't know. Naturally, we didn't see a lot of these. In fact, a lot of these emails we didn't pick up till just 2 weeks ago. The one that they said that their major objective was to drive me out of my home, out of business, and out of the state. I only got that one delivered to me about 3 weeks ago. And we got a lot more just about as cruel as that one there, just about as mean-spirited. But we have just made up our mind just in the last few months that we knew we were going to have to go that route.
Well, now, of course, this is going to be a pretty expensive thing to get into federal court. Are you prepared? Do you have the means to go ahead and do that?
Hopefully, the attorney will stay with me. As I told you, we have spent $50,000. I have no more resources right now. In fact, I have loaned my equipment out to make money, kind of working for other contractors, and they shut the jobs down the first day they see one of my trucks out on a job. So I've tried to make money kind of a roundabout way before just because I'm not licensed to work right now in the state, and yet they've sabotaged the job the first day they've seen our equipment show up. It's happened twice.
But well, that sounds to me like a conspiracy.
Certainly.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes. If you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Jude, this is a tragic situation, ladies and gentlemen. You wouldn't think this sort of thing could happen in America. But believe me, I've told not the same story, but very, very similar stories of corruption at the local administrative level. Now, if you think it's bad there, think about it, it must be at the federal level. And I can even tell you worse stories at the federal level. But, you know, these things happen at the local level because the good people are not involved. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jude Doty, and he's talking about the situation that he's run into because he's a homeschooling parent with seven children, and of course he was targeted by some officious bureaucrats who, whatever their motivation is, all we can say is they quite freely admit, at least according to Jude, that, and he has emails where they have admitted that their objective was to get him out, certainly out of his job. So basically, you got the emails. Have you gotten any other information from them, any letters or anything else? Is there anybody on the other side who'll come forward and admit what this is about?
There's a lot of them. We've done about maybe six or eight depositions. We deposed the people so far and got their testimony, and we keep exposing more corruption. I had a mic recorder on me, very good recorder, a few months back, and I there again got into another State Department, and he just totally spilled the beans. And he went so far as to say that, Doty, I won't say this before a court system, and I'll lie and perjure myself if you ever call me in. But what he did not know, it was all being recorded at the time. So,
what did he tell you?
He told me that the only reason they gave me $13,500 of fines from the Clean Air Authority is because of pressure from three or four city officials. And that he would not name them, and he did not name them. Now I've got someone else in the Clean Air Authority who's going to name them. We're setting up a deposition for them just probably within the next week. But he said if he ever got called to identify him, he'd lie and perjure himself. And he said that right on the recording. He said he'd never seen a dust violation on my property. He went so far as to say that no one in his office ever seen a dust violation on my property, but they had no choice because of pressure from city officials.
Well, I think that then you can, of course, go after those city officials because a misuse of power is really a serious offense. Now, why would the city officials be so concerned about this?
And the same man in the city drove CPS. He put a lot of pressure on the Department of Ecology. I got shut down by the Department of Ecology for supposedly tracking mud onto the road. And yet the Department of Ecology, again in their own notes, said there was no track out at all, that there was never a citation, but then I got actually got a stop work order twice from the city saying they couldn't, the Department of Ecology wanted me to stop and the city gave me. But I had over 30-some stop work orders in the last year of my work. They were just stopping me. They were following me literally probably, over 30 hours a week. I was being videoed or followed. I have got hundreds, or maybe not hundreds, I'm exaggerating now, but I probably got over 30 hours of video that I have got from requests for records from these departments videoing me. So they just followed me, they just dogged me for a half a year full time.
Hold that thought, Jody. We're going to bring our other stations right back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and as you get the story from Jody, from Jude, they basically had people videoing him 30 hours a week. They had people following him. He had people tell him, of course he was recording what was being said, they found nothing wrong or reason to cite him, but they were ordered to cite him even though that there were no EPA or dust violations, things of that sort on his property. But somebody was giving them orders. Somebody specifically had targeted him. And, of course, what do you do? Well, if you can't get into a court, how can you get the information? Now, apparently they have depositions where a lot of this is coming out. But if you can't get into a court, what do you do? And, ladies and gentlemen, if they can keep him out of a court, they can keep other people out as well.
Just last week, I got a man contacted me who was fired in the Clean Air Authority for not giving me a fine. He said we have his own memos that said he'd never seen a dust violation, and yet he was commanded to write up a $10,000 fine, and then he wouldn't sign it after he wrote the fine. But a lot of pressure, and they used many departments to come down on me. CPS, as I say, CPS tried to take my children by force downtown, tried to commandeer my own boy from me, right from my out of my arms, right out of my presence.
Well, how did you stop them from doing it?
Well, there was three of them. There was four of them. One of them was armed. Three of them was not armed. I was in labor and industry building, had an appointment to meet, and four of them, one stayed outside the door, armed, and three walked in, and they said, "We're taking Zach into custody right now unless you sign this agreement to keep him off your work sites." And I told them, "I'm not signing nothing." But the Lord gave me boldness and strength at that time, and I could see there was four of them, yet we was in a large building with a lot of other people behind, outside of that room. And I just took my confidence. Their own memos say that Doty acknowledged that he was willing to die, and no one is going to leave this room with Zach unless there are going to be some dead bodies. Well, I am not the one with the gun. They're the one that had the gun. But I threatened him. I was pretty clear. They are not going to take Zach from me. But Zach has stood with me, very loyal. You know, it's been good for our home. The Lord has brought us together. Very good. We've been a solid home. And the pressure has, my youth, they just love me. My wife, it's just, God has worked it out for good. He's a faithful God.
Well, I certainly admire you for standing up to these people, because obviously there are some wicked and evil people there that would certainly like to make your life very miserable. Now, why would they have had an armed man outside? If they send three people, why would they have somebody who was armed as well?
Yeah, the whole idea that they were there waiting for us. I had just showed up at that 1:30 appointment to meet him, and I was not in the office meeting with Ellen and I for less than probably 2 minutes when they came through the door without even knocking, did not even identify themselves. All the CPS worker said is sign here or we're taking Zach. But naturally it was set up. They had a plan. And there's been I identify over 37 things like that between the city and different departments here in the city here with CPS, Ellen and I, and the DOE and the Clean Air Authority. And
so it's basically all of these various organizations, and you've got all this documented, and you've got all the paperwork on this. So really, it's going to be just a matter of getting into the federal court system. And what have you tried to go directly to the judges there and say, look, we want to get out of this system, or are they simply all going along with it?
As I say, three times we went to the county superior court, and every time we've been thrown back into administrative process. They know that's only there to strangle me, to keep me in limbo until I'm exhausted.
Well, I think so long this is a very, very common technique that is used, and I think for our listeners out across America, you have to understand that the whole idea of the legal system is not to allow people to get a jury trial. And if you keep them in the administrative court, then, of course, the judges have the final say. This is what we saw with Terry Schiavo's situation down there. They would not have a jury hear the case, because had the jury heard the case, they wouldn't have condemned it to death. How could a judge condemn somebody to death? Why, it's all done administratively. And so what you've done is taken justice out of our courts. But what about, aren't there any judges there in your area who have the moral capacity to see how corrupt the system is and to speak against it? Have you been able to contact any of the judges? Because I know we have good judges.
In fact, two of them were involved very deeply in the mischief with me here in the city. They were on my property agreeing with Labor and Industry and the City of Yakima personally, and we've got their documents that shows that they came out with judges looking for me.
Now, wait a minute. Why would the judges come out? They're not supposed to be in the field. They're supposed to be in the courts.
Right. It was a very foolish thing. I got, in fact, arrested on that day. You can read the story. I got arrested for the city set up this whole sting operation where I had a fence around my construction site. And they took the fence down, called in the media, called in a judge. Actually, the mayor and the city manager and another official made over 45 phone calls scheduling the event, even with the judge, as I say, five medias. They took down the fence, and then I got arrested for not having a site unsecured, when in fact the city has never once secured one of their own construction sites. And the court that I had them hearings in, it went for not quite 2 years, actually it went for 22 months. The court was under construction for that full time. with a large expansion project, and it never had a fence around it.
Well, now, but you say they took down your fence, and then they charged you for
down.
Not having a fence?
Right. They actually took out three panels of the fence. The fence is these 12-foot portable fences you put around construction sites. I had my site fenced. I was one of only three or four sites in the city out of hundreds of sites that was not fenced. There is a city ordinance that says they're supposed to have fencing, yet it is never enforced. And that whole thing got thrown out of court just yesterday. I was in the court yesterday, and the city threw that one aside after 18 hearings. And, in fact, the last hearing I had, not yesterday, but last month in February, they acknowledged that they had lost four out of my seven documents that had entered into evidence. They're actually missing out of the court record, and they were missing out of the prosecutor's record. And that's when that judge withdrew herself, a woman, from the bench. She was the second judge to be withdrawn from the bench.
What do you mean? She recused herself. In other words, she didn't want to participate in this?
Yes, but she didn't explain why. But what we found out the next day, when the jury was called in, which was in the 2nd of February, or 3rd of whatever, February, when the jury was already there, we realized that four out of seven documents that we had entered were missing from the record. And the day before, she excused herself. Accused, is that the word?
Recused. In other words, a judge can withdraw from the case if they feel there's a conflict of interest or for some personal reason they don't want to hear this. Well, do you think that she was aware of the fact that they were actually violating the laws and they had targeted you and she didn't want to be part of it?
I don't know why she did release herself from the jury. I do know from the case, I do know the next day is when we realized four articles were missing from the court record. They've never been found. And I know the earlier judge that I filed an affidavit against was on the property talking with the mayor and the manager about this issue and some other LNI officials. So the whole thing is just, and it goes on, there's 36 stories like that that I have with LNI in the city of Yakima. It just doesn't stop. Just that same kind of foolishness. My boy had a nice electronic camera with him, and we've actually got pictures of two officers tackling him and bringing him down to the ground because he was taking pictures of stolen equipment that the city had in their possession. And he got tackled while on the city street corner, right on the sidewalk.
Well, now, have you gone to the state Supreme Court? Because I know that's what Ronnie Robeson did. He actually went to the state Supreme Court and had them bring in an outside judge to get a fair trial.
Right, and maybe, no, we have not went that route. There again, I've about exhausted my means. I think the attorney is going to stay with me. He is claiming that he will have it filed in Monday here in the federal court. I hope that happens now here on Monday. So, by God's grace, we're going to stay with it till the end.
Well, I would certainly talk to Ronnie Robeson because of what he was able to do, because there was so much corruption in Wenatchee, and the judges were involved in the corruption as well, and the district attorney and the sheriff's office, that the state sent in a separate judge to hear the case.
Yes, yes.
So I really think that you want to take full advantage of Roby over there in Wenatchee. How far is Wenatchee from Yakima?
Maybe 100, just a little over 100 miles, 100
right.
miles. 100 miles.
I suppose it's just got sort of an old boys club that runs the town. Is that how it works?
I do expect, yes, I think so. There's just three main players here in the city that we are finding involved in my situation. They literally had almost full-time surveillance on me for 7 or 8 months, almost full, over 12 hours a day.
And, of course, if you can have one of the people who got fired who saw nothing wrong and was ordered to write up a report on you that wasn't true, I mean, that borders on conspiracy.
Yeah. So we got a lot of good people even coming forward right now. There's others that are coming forward. So the Lord's been helping us uncover this thing. It's been a wonderful, the discovery has just been God great through the whole thing. We've seen God help us uncover this thing from the get-go.
Well, I hope maybe somebody would even come in and some good author would come in and write up the whole incredible story, because sometimes that's a way of getting national attention to the corruption that exists, but the corruption only exists because the good people do nothing. And because the churches are quiet and the ministers don't want to be controversial. I think the biggest disappointment for Ronnie Roby Roberson, himself a minister, was that none of the ministers in his area would take his side against the government. And even after it proved that the government was corrupt and he got all those 25 people out of prison who'd been sent there, unjustly, still none of the ministers had the courage to take a stand.
Yes, I realize that. That's the sad part. We hope God would wake up the church, that they would take their position and stand when they need to stand.
Well, I think that, of course, when the church has lost its savor, when it's lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I think that that's really the problem that we have in the Christian church in America today.
I focus on one thing big time in our own home, and I encourage my children and my own wife and all of us regularly. We see these trials of our faith are precious than gold. The process is here to prove our faith is genuine, and I know a number of your listeners have trials of different sorts in their own lives, but if we can throw these cares upon the Lord, that's not our battle. I keep telling my family, this is not my battle. God is faithful God. You know, Jehoshaphat, he was outnumbered about 20-1, and he put the worshipers out front. They chose to praise the Lord. They sung praise and give thanksgiving. And God was faithful because that was his battle to fight. And I take it the same way. I say, I throw these cares upon the Lord. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. And God will be my victor.
Well, the website, if you'd like to go to the website, is www.familiesthatwork.org. Is that right?
Familiesthatwork.org. And now, just last week, I added a special one. I had a kind of a security code, and I guess I'm going to make it public right now. But there's /legal. After you do that, you can go /legal, and then a username is Sandlin, which is my attorney, Sandlin, and password again is legal. And then at that point, you'll open up all the city charges, which we've kept them kind of hidden undercover. We wasn't going to put all of our cards on the table until we actually had this thing filed in the court as far as our allegations. We were keeping it kind of under our hat, naturally not wanting to put everything out on the table first. But if you go to familiesthatwork.org/legal, and then username is Sandlin, Sandlin, and then the password is legal, you will open up the profile that we have very well accounting to the 36 major wrongs here in the city of Yakima. So there's going to be a good outcome. I think there's been God's battle all along. I can see it has been because he's just done some supernatural, some good things. And he's done some good things in my own home, and he's identified some things that I could have never dug out.
Well, now, what about the other contractors? Are any of the other contractors that are pitching in and helping?
You know, a lot of them encourage me. Everybody is scared to fight the system. Everybody is scared to fight labor and industry. They know labor and industry has got over 300 attorneys that work on their behalf from the attorney general's office.
No, this is the state, then, state attorney general.
Yes.
Now, is this a state issue, or, in other words, is the state doing this, or is this mostly local?
It's the state and the city. They both have locked arms here in this thing here. But they're using the state attorney general's office to wear me out in this case.
So the state is involved in that. Well, I would think that you would have, of course, a recourse to the state Supreme Court, and I would think that would be a very, very good case, because you can get them involved as well as the federal government. So don't put that one aside. At least I know that Roby got some real good help from the state judges. And they, as I say, they brought in a special judge because they knew that the judges in Wenatchee were all in bed together and that he could not get a fair trial. So they sent a special judge to Wenatchee just to hear that case. And whether he heard it in Wenatchee across the river, I don't know, but that's how he got a fair trial. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there in the listening audience, understand that when the judicial system becomes corrupt, then no man's life or property is safe. And the judicial system, so much of it in this country, is corrupt, and there are good judges out there, but a lot of times they're afraid to take a stand. And that's really a frightening thing. And there are a lot of good people, but they're afraid to take a stand, so they're afraid the government's going to come after them, too. And, of course, it's this sort of thing that makes cowards of men. So I'm proud of you, Jude, for having the courage to stand up and do what's right.
Yes, and God's going to, it'll come out good, and yeah, we know that He is faithful, and we'll have a good end in this whole thing. So we've not been discouraged. It's been all right.
But of course, nine of you living in an recreational vehicle must be pretty tough. What about the kids? Are your wife still doing the homeschooling with them?
Well, we've only been there now. This is only going to be our first night in that RV. And naturally, now that opens the door for CPS to get in our face again. So there's always another hurdle around the corner. We'll see how it pans out. Maybe some other family might open the doors up to us here in the city we need to stay here because we do have a lot of legal action going on regularly every week here in this
Well, there's some people, I'm sure, in Yakima who are actually listening to this program because, fortunately, we have an excellent listening audience there in the eastern state part of the state of Washington, which is one reason I wanted to have you on, as well as our listeners out across America by shortwave, by internet, and then, of course, in a lot of them in the eastern part of the United States and Texas. And anyway, probably about 15 stations all to hold listening to this program, as well as two shortwave and two internet outlets. So we have a voice. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question at all for our guest, Jude Doty, on this incredible story, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. Jude, do you have a cell phone or any way that anybody could call you if they don't have access to the internet?
We don't right now. We're out of service. We're going to be a witness home for good now. And I had a cell phone a while back, but we've lost everything. Our finance has been very tight in the last year, naturally. So,
well, what I want you to do is you sort of keep in touch with me by phone. And in case, of course, we do get any calls across America, if you want to reach Jude and you have a question or comment, why, of course, you can call me and hopefully Jude will be in touch with me. We can, of course, keep you appraised of what he's doing. And if you need to call him, talk to him for any reason why, you can contact him through me.
Or the email. People, and you know.
What is your email? That's a good way.
Jude Doty at Yahoo.
Jude Doty, that's one word?
Yes, at Yahoo.
J-U-D-E-D-O-T-Y, is that right?
D-O-T-Y. And there again, you'll find that email at familiesatwork.org.
All right, fine. Familiesatwork.org, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is a time of this last 3 minutes of the program, and we have to let Jude go after that. Jude, what are your parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners out across America, but specifically there in Yakima, where we have a station and outlet, and then in Wenatchee, and of course over in Spokane, and in the western part of Idaho around Coeur d'Alene? What's the message you'd like to leave with these people?
You know, the state is strong. They can intimidate and threaten us, but God is more strong. He's faithful, and He will take us through it. So I don't want Christians to be sheepish and cowardly and bow down to the system. We need to stand up, and we'll come out good. The trial of faith is more precious than gold. These trials will result in praise, honor, and glory when we see the Lord. So consider it pure joy when you fall into trials. We glory in our hope, but also in our tribulation. I'm going to tell Christians to stand up and be counted, and God will give us victory. It's not our battle. It's the Lord's battle. He is faithful. He is faithful. He is faithful. And He's proved that in my own family for these 2 years of battle. I've seen my boys and my girls and my wife. I've seen us all just, we've laid on the floor some nights and we've just travailed in the Lord when we had nowhere else to go. We had nowhere else to go. In fact, tonight we're out of our home. And yet God is faithful. So I tell the church, God is faithful. I know that He's faithful. Throw your cares upon the Lord, and He will care for you.
Well, I can't disagree with that at all. I think it's wonderful that you have that faith. And, of course, this is the only thing that's going to see you through. Of course, the message we get to our listeners out across America is this whole country is in for some terrible, terrible times. And I hope you'll learn a lesson from what Jude is saying tonight. We're going to have to learn increasingly to put our faith in the Lord, because that may very well be all that we will have as our country moves into a period of financial chaos and crisis, as I fear that there will be certainly a tax on America, the country that we've known as the leader of the world, will soon be a second or third world nation. It is planned. That's exactly why they are raising the price of oil, raising the price of electricity, raising the price of energy, while they're shipping our jobs and our factories overseas, redistributing our wealth, destroying the value of our currency. All of these things are going to happen. They're happening right now. We're going to have to become increasingly reliant upon the Lord. God bless you, Jude, and please keep me appraised of what's going on, will you?
Okay.
And I really appreciate so much you're willing to come on and to share your experience with us and to share your faith, because that's the one message we hope that we'll be able to get from out across America. We've got a caller from Rhode Island, and so we'll just take this final call as soon as we have just a moment here. Let's hold just one moment here. Well, we've got Jeff calling from Rhode Island. Hi, Jeff. Did you have a question or comment?
Hey, Dr. Finn.
Yeah.
Hi. Jude, I do have a comment. The Wall Street Journal a number of years ago covered the Wenatchee, Washington, the events
Child abuse, the child abuse there at Wenatchee, which of course is totally fraudulent. Go ahead.
Right. They covered it very well and very extensively, and very sympathetic to the accused. And I'm wondering, Jude, if you ever thought of contacting the Wall Street Journal to do an investigative report on this whole affair. I'm sure they would be more than interested in doing that.
That sounds like an excellent idea. Have you thought of that at all?
I haven't. Now, CNN was involved. Fox was involved with me for a while. 2020 was involved for a long while. Did a lot of videoing here at my home. A lot of medias have, and then they get into it so deep, and they just get commanded by every time we hear. Well, my supervisor told me I have to let this one go. I've got to drop it.
Well, why don't you try the Wall Street Journal?
Maybe
they'll have the courage to do it.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you what, it's quite obvious that this is much bigger than simply you. In other words, this goes right up to the very state attorney general in the state of Washington, D.C. And when you're dealing with corruption like that, many times even the major networks are afraid to get involved. Why don't you give the Wall Street Journal a try? You got nothing to lose.
Yes.
God bless.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for the call, Jeff. Good idea. And Jude, thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, this is Dr. Stan, and this is an amazing, amazing story. And we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider helping Jude and his family. The website is www.familiesthatwork.org. Because just remember, it could be any one of us that comes under the same surveillance and is targeted. We're dealing with evil and wicked people. And to understand what's going on today, you really need to get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And you can get the book, the video, or the audio tape, or get them all together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to get the video we have. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, and it's available both in video and in DVD at the present time, just available now in DVD. You need to get the videos, Megiddo 1, which of course is the story of the prophecies, starting with Daniel, and then going through the false prophets of Nostradamus and Edgar Casey, and then right up into World War III, which we are already involved in. They just haven't told you we're involved in World War III, but it's only a matter of time before we're at war with Syria, or we topple Syria. It's only a matter of time before we're at war with Iran, if we can't topple Iran. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there are going to be terrible, terrible repercussions for what we're doing. The article this evening about the malnutrition among the Iraqi children, the incidence of malnutrition, which was already high before we invaded because of our embargo, is now even higher. And of course, the 100,000 Iraqi civilians and military that have been slaughtered over there, 90,000 homes destroyed in Fallujah, as we sit comfortably in our homes here, doing absolutely nothing about what our government is doing. Having invaded under false pretenses, everything built upon a lie. Where is the outcry from the American people today? Remember, if God is just, His justice will not sleep forever. And Americans, men and women, become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you get Megiddo 1, that's 2 1/4 hours, very professionally produced video, well, you're going to hear Carol Matriciana in that, and she's going to be our guest this next hour. And then, of course, Megiddo 2 is 3 hours, very professionally produced. The story of a civilization from the Garden of Eden right up to the present day, and Carol's in that. Even I have a small part in that as we talk about Madam Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and the Georgia Guidestones and the occult forces that are at work in America today. So they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, they will be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us this evening Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about her book, The Gods of the New Age, and, of course, her videos. But I wanted to start out talking about a book that she wrote many years ago about her life, her experience, starting in India as the daughter of a British official there during the waning days of the British occupation of India, and growing up here where occultism is simply a way of life, where they have people who can walk on coals and charm snakes and climb ropes and lay on beds of spikes and all sorts of supernatural things. But supernatural is part of the of India, because of course occultism is very, very strong there. And of course, what people don't understand is these same occultic beliefs that were so prevalent in India 40-50 years ago are invading every aspect of our lives here in America today, because this is indeed the foundation of the New Age movement, the new religion of America. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, Dr. Stan, it's always such a privilege being with you. Thank you for allowing me to be your guest again.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book? And incidentally, Carol does still have copies of the book. They are available through her ministry. We'll give you information on getting that later. But why don't you tell our listeners just the story of the gods of the New Age?
Well, as you mentioned, I was born and raised in India. I was fifth generation born there, and really grew up thinking that it was very natural to have people of all faiths and religions around me. Every day in India is a festival of to some deity. There are, many have said that there are over 9 million gods in India. There certainly are an absolute enormous amount, and every day, as I say, is some kind of a holiday to some pagan goddess, god, or any type of one of the hundreds and thousands of their mythical creatures. Now, of course, there are certain larger days, and I was raised in Calcutta, where the goddess Kali, the black god of destruction, is prevalent, and of course her name Kali is what Calcutta was named after. Kali Ghat actually is what Calcutta was named after, and Ghat are the steps to Kali. So it's Kali's steps, and then the people would go down to the river, and at the huge festival of Kali, hundreds of thousands of mud goddesses made in the image of Kali would be thrown into the river, and she is the wife of the consort of the god Shiva. She is both destroyer and creator, the black goddess of death and life, the murderer and the birth giver, a very extraordinary complex confusion of India's mystical belief system.
No, because we find a lot of very, very confusing mystical belief system in America today. As more and more people try to, of course, contact another dimension to find this mystical power, which they think, of course, is going to give them happiness, but unfortunately will eventually destroy them. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Carol Matriciana talking about her book, Gods of the New Age. It was really an all-time bestseller many years ago, and we'll talk more about that. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. We're talking about her book, Gods of the New Age, and so pick up the story there.
Well, really, I think my whole adventure, and I call it that in a rather scary sense, was that even though I grew up as a child in India seeing Hinduism and Islam and many different kinds of denominations of Hinduism, Jainism, Sikhism, guru worship of all shades and varieties, plus animism, the worship of spirit beings and animals, where the cow is revered and who's considered to be holy. Her urine is spiritual. If it's drunk, it spiritually enhances the drinker of her urine, which is absolutely extraordinary. And I'd see that as I was growing up. I'd see as I was going to school. A maned cow, I remember, with her a leg growing out of her neck, and because she was considered to be a reincarnated god in this deformed way, she was covered in garlands, marigold garlands, and considered to be holy and precious. And Hindus would bring their last little bowls of food and rice to her, and I remember just thinking this was so extraordinary. But really, I grew up thinking it was natural. It was, even though it was very confusing, I remember one time going to school and seeing a dead person laying on the sidewalk. And the sidewalks, of course, are always filled with hundreds of thousands of people who live on the sidewalks and sleep there. And this dead person was there, and nobody would help this. Get it out of the way or carry it. Someone of lower caste had to come and carry this dead person away. And of course that's the same with sick and maimed people, that if you touch them or help them, then you're tinkering with their karma. The punishment and the whatever they've got going for them is a sort of result of reincarnation of what they did in lives gone by. And so there's this sort of this hopeless cycle of just an imprisonment of the soul just going on and on, and you can't repair it because you really don't know what you did in your past life, and but whatever you're suffering now is a consequence of it.
Oh,
sorry?
It's just it's amazing to think this really goes on and probably still goes on largely in India today. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, and of course we're talking about her life in India, and certainly the whole situation, all the different religions, the caste system, the abject poverty, the a totally confusing society for a young woman born into a British home. So anyway, you're seeing that, and you're really, of course, looking for, I'm sure, meaning for life, looking for the religious meaning for life, because we all are looking for that. After all, if we're left to our own devices, life is, many ways, sort of a matter of hopelessness, you know, the old idea that life is a matter of quiet desperation. But, of course, people searching for life, meaning, why? What did you find as you began to mature then?
Well, the incredible thing is that you sort of get this potpourri of thoughts, you know, and very diverse, because obviously Islam is diverse to Hinduism and all the different even Christian denominations. For instance, Catholicism absorbed a lot of the Hindu culture around it. So I did know I was very fearful of certain things, particularly the goddess Kali, who I'd see with these the garland of 29 of her husband's heads around her, sort of adorned as a necklace around her neck, and she'd stick her tongue out, and this red tongue, and was a very bloody goddess that needed to be appeased by blood sacrifices and offerings. And even in India, and I'm sure in Hindu temples to Kali all around the world, and perhaps even in America, the foundations of every temple had human virgins, because she desired the blood of human beings in order to appease her. So I was very, very terrified of her and certain aspects of yoga, the tantric, the black yoga, which I'd see in the streets of India, was frightening. But the most amazing thing, Dr. Stan, was in the 60s when we returned to the West, my parents and I, after India had gained independence and my parents had finished their work there, we came back, and Hinduism had been totally repackaged to be a very fashionable fad to the Westerners in the 60s. The Beatles were singing its values. Hollywood celebrities were looking to yoga. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the guru of transcendental meditation, had promoted his style of yoga to alleviate stress as being tremendously enhancing to the Western world. And so I saw all this repackaging of yoga and Eastern mysticism, which I had certainly not been attracted to as a child and had stayed away from with quite a bit of fear, now had been seductively repackaged in such captivating charm that everybody was turning to the peace movement and drugs and yoga and all these various gurus. And within, oh, even less than a decade, we had the Hare Krishnas going through the streets of London and New York and the streets in Europe. There was, of course, not only Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, but followed very closely by other cults and the Children of God and Scientology and all these other groups that were just coming in because people were searching for answers. And I, without even realizing, got seductively trapped into becoming a westernized Hindu, and actually got involved in vegetarianism and yoga and Eastern thinking. And within 2-3 years, I was just pulled into it. It was just absolutely amazing, until I had an encounter in Chicago by a Bible-believing group of Jesus people that introduced me to the scriptures for the first time, to the Bible, to the reality of Jesus Christ having died for my sins to set me free, and that reincarnation was not what one had to go through, endless cycles of death and life and death and life and having no control over them, that our eternity was once and for all paid for by the blood of Jesus, and we could be set free and have abundant life in the here and the now, and not be involved in painstaking yoga exercises and other works of, you know, that I had got trapped into. So it was a very, very liberating time for me in the early 70s, and a time when so many of my friends were wrapped up in all these different mystical paths. And by the grace of God, I got involved at that time in helping hundreds and thousands of people that were involved in various different groups. And it was a wonderful, wonderful time. And it was soon after that that I actually wrote the book Gods of the New Age and made a film, went to India, traveled, interviewed the gurus and the godmen of India, and started looking into researching that this whole sort of takeover, if you will, this conspiracy to the mystical conspiracy threatening today's world, it didn't actually begin in the 60s. It was perhaps manifested in the 60s, but the first guru that was introduced in America came over during the Chicago, the World Fair in Chicago, which was at the end of the 1800s, early 1900s, and that was the sort of first introduction of Eastern mysticism into America.
Well, of course, although we have Christian missionaries over in India, don't they actually have their missionaries over here trying
Absolutely. It's a very concerted effort. The Hindu Vishva Parishad is very aggressive in converting Westerners. And, of course, there's just as strong an Islam movement. In fact, in the last few decades, there's been a terrifying outreach, if you will, a missionary movement. And in fact, on my webpage, I've got a new book up that talks about how Islam plans to change the world. It's an extremely revealing book and talks about the missionary efforts of the Muslim and how they are absolutely bent on the worldwide growth of Islam.
Well, now, is this something really fairly new for Islam, certainly in the past, why they were very dominant? They controlled the southern part of France, and they were driven out of Spain, of course, in 1492, and then I think it was, 1683, they were turned back at the gates of Vienna. And then since the Second World War, really the First World War, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, why, of course, they seem not to be very aggressive, other than perhaps the Muslim Brotherhood and the Wahhabis. But when did this effort really to begin to evangelize the world for Islam, for Muhammad, when did that really become a major force in modern times?
It's very interesting because actually about, 15 years ago, I interviewed English Muslims in England, because there the Queen has given the highest mosque, I believe, in Europe, was given by the Queen to the Muslim world to make their mosque on the corner of Regent's Park in London. And that, as is their wont, the mosque is always taller than the tallest Christian church. And St. Paul's Cathedral, which is a very high dome, is no longer the highest because the mosque in London towers above that. But one of the Muslim leaders, a leading Muslim speaker in Europe, said that Islam's race to win the world was detoured for about 400 years, but now it is back on track to achieve our goal, the setting up of a worldwide Islam community.
Now, this is, what, about 15 years ago?
This quote I just gave you is quite a recent quote within the last few years.
All right.
But what we do see is the unfolding conflict between Islam and the West is not just a clash of cultures. It really is a head-to-head confrontation between a religion intent on world domination and a culture confused and unsettled by rising hatred and violence. And what we learn in this book that I'm at the moment carrying, How Islam Plans to Change the World, that they have three worlds, three ways of their sort of mission strategy, if you will. And if you look at their rapid worldwide growth, it's credited to this, first of all, the well-financed mission strategy. They it's a very loose strategy, but it's advanced in three tactical methods. The first is, of course, jihad, which is holy war, which we saw at the bombing of the Twin Towers and the Pentagon, and very recently with the sort of the, what made jihad a word that became into our vocabulary. That's the first, the holy war, and then there's dawah, that is missions, and then the presence of Islam is put through with the mosques, and we see that in each of the countries that they come in, they put their mosques there, and the mosques tower above Christian churches. And here in America, it is just incredible, the growth of Islam.
But of course, who is financing this whole thing? It takes a lot of money to build the mosque, to finance the imams who run the mosque, to put out the elaborate propaganda that's being circulated throughout the, for instance, the prisoners. They're going into our prisons with the full support of the prison officials.
Yes.
And of course, not only are they given special privileges, they're given special food, they're given special time for prayer. We wouldn't give the Christians time for prayer, but
no,
we sure would with the Muslims. And you have to wonder what is the possible motive of our political leaders that are encouraging the rise of Islam. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Carol Matriciano. And Carol, let me ask you that question, because I've asked this of many people I've talked to about what's happening here in the United States. Certainly the Muslim people are allowed to go into the prisons. They are allowed to proselytize and try to bring the specifically the black population, who already feels disenfranchised, into the Muslim faith. But they are given special meals, special diet there. They're given special time for prayer. They're given the month of Ramadan. They can pray the whole month. They don't do that for the Christians. So why does it appear that the prison officials, in many instances, are favoring the Muslim faith over the Christian faith? That doesn't make sense, or does it?
Well, I think that there are small minority activists, and we see that in our politics with the small groups of feminists, the small groups of homosexuals. They're very politically active. And when you get these aggressive small groups that just spend their entire time and effort and money getting across their agenda, it seems as though, in a sense, it's much more powerful than it really is. And I'm not undermining the power of the feminist movement, the gay movement, the strong Muslim outreach. I mean, they are all, each of them are fanatical. And I think what it does is it totally disrupts the foundational system. None of these groups actually could function in any other country. For instance, in India or the Arab countries where I grew up, particularly in India, this kind of aggressive behavior wouldn't really work in a sense. It almost needs a Christian foundation to be able to grow so rapidly. I don't know if that makes sense, but the concept of being tolerant and allowing multicultural interaction is something that has been given much more place in America, and one time in England, and then, of course, the old saying in Arab countries is that once the camel has got his nose into the tent, then he slowly takes over and comes into the tent and pushes the owner out, so to speak. But it's very interesting how all of this is culminating. In London, I was there last year, and I was amazed at the growth of Islam there. And actually, London is a very targeted place. One of the missionary people, one of the Muslims there that we interviewed, said that London, that England was a focus, was the sort of the focus of Europe. That if they could Islamize England, then Europe would, it would be a very
it would be very easy to take off the rest
right,
of Europe.
Right.
But the thing is, of course, that they're not going to get to the average Englishman, are they? Aren't they mainly focusing on the people of Arab descent?
Yes and no, Dr. Stan. There, of course, because in these countries there are so many immigrants coming in.
Hold that thought here for just a moment
okay.
here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana. She's talking about having been in England just this last year, talking to a Muslim missionary, a missionary who was there to bring the Muslim faith to England. And his remark was, if they could, of course, target England, if they could, of course, convert England into a Muslim country, then the rest of Europe would come very, very readily. And of course, my comment was, well, you really don't expect that they're going to be able to convince Englishmen that they should become Muslims. And Carol was going on to say, well, but there are so many immigrants coming in. So you pick up your thought right
well,
there, Carol.
Well, yes. Now, first, of course, it's twofold. It's looking after the Muslims that have come into America or Europe, looking after their spiritual needs by building mosques and maintaining, making them stronger within the community so that they don't become converted, let's say, to the religion of the country that they immigrate to. So that is the first thing, is to keep them strong in the in their spirituality. But secondly, is to go out into the prisons or homes and strongly proselytize. And one of these ways of doing this is through the presence of mosques in these countries. And it's absolutely incredible. The growth, first of all, of the presence of mosques, but to see that how much a mosque provides some of the type of assistance for the needy in the areas. You know, for instance, more than 20% of the mosques have a full-time school. More than 90% of respondents agree that Muslims should be involved in American institutions and should participate in the political process.
But of course, they don't. They want to change the process. They really want to make this into a Muslim country, don't they?
Of course they do.
If you had a Muslim country, you wouldn't have a political process.
No, I mean, one of the incredible things is that at the moment, and these are very conservative estimates, that there's a total American Muslim population of 7 million people. So that's an American Muslim population. So you've got the American Muslims, and then they are proselytizing. Now, a few months ago, I interviewed an American lady who became a Muslim. And it was the most incredible interview that she gave me, that there are thousands of American women being targeted by Muslim men in America who go into the campuses, offer American girls tuition to pay their tuition if they marry them. Muslim men, the target, this was what she said in her interview, their target, and she was married to one such man, is to marry 4 American women. Now, she didn't realize that her Muslim husband had 3 other wives when she was married to him. And it was absolutely incredible.
Well, of course, we call that polygamy, and it's against the law here in America.
Well, it's not considered against Muslim law. And
the trouble is that we're not enforcing our laws. We're actually, there's an organized concerted effort to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, to bring in people of other faiths, to bring in people who will maintain their other cultures, to bring in people who will maintain their separate languages and their separate cultures, and an effort really to disrupt the infrastructure of our society. And we're allowing people, Saudi Arabia, to spend countless billions of dollars here in the United States building these mosques to undermine the very foundation of our society. And why would any society that wasn't intent upon its own destruction allow this sort of thing to go on? This is not a matter of freedom. This is a matter of tolerating a subversive movement within our own country, and it's being fostered by our own leaders. That is what's so unconscionable.
It is amazing. In fact, in the film that you carry, the New Barbarians, there was an interesting 10-minute segment at the end showing how America itself here, young Muslim terrorists, young children are being encouraged in extremist thinking here. But going back to the mosques in this country and the American Muslim population, it's a relatively new thing. Mosques are relatively young. Only 30% of all mosques were established in the 1990s here in America, and 32% were founded in the 1980s. So we see the presence of mosques, which is one of the loose strategies, these three tactical methods that Islam is projecting here in America and, of course, in Europe.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Carol Matriciana. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is a very real problem in America. And it is not happening by accident. Any effort to have English-only language here has been blocked at every turn by those who would destroy our nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana. Of course, we're talking about the influence of the Muslim faith in Great Britain and the United States. And they have really targeted both of our countries, haven't they?
Yes, they have. And I think the interesting thing is after 9/11, 9/11 was sort of a springboard event, not only in introducing us to the word jihad, which is holy war in Islam and one of the three tactical methods of on their sort of loose strategy of advancement of Islam into this country, but 9/11 was the springboard of showing the American opinion of Islam. There was a tremendous evangelical, if you'd call it a sort of evangelism process, that there was this sort of opinions of Islam came out of it, and they had their spokespeople trying to make out that terrorism wasn't part of Islam, that it was a peace-loving movement, that it was a movement, a religion that helped the community and all that sort of thing. But in real close examination of this religion, you see that here is a religion that, in essence, tried to conquer the world. I mean, they wanted to win the world, and it's been detoured for the past 400 years, but it's right back on track now, and we've got this quiet revolution taking place, and it's targeting the inner cities of the world. In America today, Islam is growing rapidly in the cities. The appeal of it, there's many dimensions to it, but it's a very interesting sort of new pronged effort. I remember when I wrote the book Gods of the New Age, Hinduism was the big mystical religion of the 60s and 70s and 80s to sort of shift our thinking from the Christian foundations to looking within and meditating on believing that one had power and potential inside of oneself to achieve whatever you wanted, and that grew into the self-help movement, into the inner growth movement and all those things, but Islam has come in such an amazing way of going into prisons, into...
Hold that thought right there. We're going to have to bring other stations on back right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana. Her book is Gods of the New Age, and of course we carry a number of her videos, The Gods of Entertainment, New Barbarians, Harry Potter, the videos on witchcraft. But right now, we'll tell you in a few minutes how to get the videos from us. And before we do anything else, though, Carol, let's get your website out so people can go there and they want to get your book or some of the other things that you have written. I know you have them available. Why don't you get your website out now?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. My website is my name, which is spelled C-A-R-Y-L. So what they do is they go into www.caryltv.com. caryltv.com.
And what about the telephone number if they don't have access to the internet?
That's 1-800. Gosh, I always...
897-5080.
Thank you, 897-5080.
And the reason I know that is because my producer has it up here on the screen. That's 1-800-897-5080.
Thank you, producer.
And if you, of course, don't get that, why, you call Jeannie on the board and she'll get it for you. Well, let's right now go to Terry, who's calling us from Sun Valley. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I think your guess is going where I was leading. I was wondering if part of the reason Islam has had success in the West is because much of the Christian religion has been so undermined that it's become rather vacuous. And Islam, with its very definitely stated principles and, you might say, intolerance, has since filled the void once that Christianity had, when it was more morally on sounder ground.
Would you like to comment on that, Carol?
I didn't hear it.
Well,
very
basically, what
documented.
He's saying is that he's concerned that since they've undermined Christianity and Christian faith, and they've really sort of cut the ground out from Christian belief, made it sort of mamby-pamby, and and of course, sort of a Christ without a cross, and a heaven without a hell, and
yeah.
And love without a possibility of punishment, and they've just destroyed the undermining fabric and principles of Christianity. He's saying that this void is the Muslim faith moving in as a void into the void, and some people who might have in the past been attracted to Christianity, had it adhered to its principles, now are finding in the Muslim faith something that they can really put their faith in, something that gives you absolutes and absolute rules to live by
A
purpose to live for.
Absolutely. The Muslim faith is a very, very strong faith of structure. For instance, a Muslim will visit a mosque as often as 35 times a week. The actual building is vitally important to the followers of Islam. They have, if you ask a Muslim about his faith, it's presented in easy, and it's easy to comprehend. If you ask him to define his faith, his belief system, he'll immediately tell you that it contains the five pillars and the seven basic beliefs, and all Muslims, no matter to which sect they belong, will all know the basics. Now, you ask a Christian the same question, and the answer will be like a shotgun blast with all types of descriptions. So, yes, they portray dignity, self-discipline, a sense of community. They reach out to the minority populations. That's a very important part of their five pillars. That's their third pillar. That forms the core of the most, they go into the inner cities. African Americans and others are targeted, as Dr. Stan mentioned earlier. They'll go into prisons. In fact, in this interview I had recently, with this lady who'd been she's an American lady. In fact, she won, she was one of the beauty queens of one of the states, and she was a high profile lady, and when she got converted, she actually became their spokesperson for American women, and said that the conversion rate, that they targeted 10,000 women a year in America on the campuses. There were just so many just amazing things she brought to mind. But
wasn't she a little upset that her husband had three other wives?
Yeah. Oh, well, that was actually ultimately the thing that got her out.
She did actually leave.
Yes.
I wouldn't know why any woman would want to be a Muslim. Now, if you were raised in it, it might be one thing, but to actually go into it, because, of course, the status of women is so much lower here. Christianity, of course, tells us that men and women are of equal stature before the Lord. And, of course, there may be a structure within the family itself that the Lord has depicted. But, I mean, men are to love their wives as Christ loves the church. So, you know, men have an obligation to look after the wives, not to demean them as they certainly are demeaned within the Muslim faith.
Well, she spoke of physical injury. It wasn't unusual for her to be beaten. And it wasn't unusual for other Caucasian women that had become Muslims to be beaten by their husbands, and they were terrified to discuss it. And she eventually, having now come out, and if anybody is listening that needs any help, I can put them in touch with her, but she has now started up a group of hurting, the victims of these tragic marriages, and helping women to be able to be strong enough to get out. And she's got quite a strong support group. Of course, she's running for her life and has been involved in awful lawsuits, but she's a strong lady, a very, very strong lady.
Well, of course, the other thing is, of course, that they will take your children from him, and they'll take them back over to the Arabian country, and you'll never see them again.
That's exactly what's happened, yep.
And this is a standard technique, and that's one reason, of course, it keeps the wife in the marriage, because she doesn't want to lose her children. And of course, they have tremendous political power in this country. They have tremendous finances, and our government gives in to them time after time after time, in the same way that our government is actually encouraging this radical form of Islam right here in the United States and in our prisons, and they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Terry, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
I was wondering, what is the stance of Prince Charles with regard to this? Because when I heard Joan Vion, I think it was Joan Vion, she said, I think that he is somehow involved in Islam.
Okay. Do you know anything at all
about
that?
Well, that is an interesting question. Some 20 years ago, or even actually, no, more than that, 30 years ago, the royal family were involved in giving some of their land to the building of a mosque, the tallest mosque in London, which is built on the Queen's property in Regent Park. And, of course, they were, whether this was, I'm sure, it shows that for political reasons or whatever it is, the fact is that obviously they're tolerant towards, a building that came up taller than St. Paul's Cathedral.
I think that tells you a great deal about what's really going on. Mm-hmm. I believe, of course, the royal family has been involved in the occult for a long period of time. The Order of the Garter is an extremely occult organization. And, of course, there's rumors, and Joan Vion says that Prince Charles has adopted the Muslim faith. He doesn't talk about it, but whether that's true or not, we'll have to check that out. Maybe you can check that out for us, Terry.
All right, thank you very much.
God bless. And let's go to Tim, who's calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. And, Tim, did you have a question?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions for Carol. Carol, what is your religion, by the way? I'm a Catholic, Greek Orthodox.
Tim, I was born and raised as a Catholic. Growing up in India, Catholicism there was quite different to the Orthodox Catholicism that you're involved in now. And I think the interesting thing with Catholicism is that it sort of absorbs the culture of the country it's in, and I found Catholicism in India to be quite mystical, but that's the faith I was raised in. And then since that time, I have got closer and closer to reading the Bible, which when I grew up as a Catholic, we weren't permitted to read the Bible, and of course things have changed a lot now. But when I was first introduced and given the freedom of reading the Bible, I would say that I became very involved in the fundamental biblical concept of Christianity, and I suppose I've become a Protestant, if that's the technical way of saying it. I'd say I'm a believer in Jesus Christ and adhere to the scriptures.
Well,
you have a question, though.
Yes, a few minutes ago you seemed somewhat alarmed. The tone of your voice changed about Islam. Religion is on the rise, or it's spreading. I mean, here we are in America. We have freedom of religion, all religions, which I'm happy, I'm glad, I love it. And yet, we see, you just mentioned Luciferians are running the country. I'm sure I've been educated by Dr. Stan about the, you know, the Trilateral Commission and the rest of them, the Bilderbergers, but George Bush and associates. But I don't, is it true that I feel close with Islamic people, they honor the birth of Christ, you celebrate his birth, and, you know, your Islamic people, they're anti-abortion. They don't tell the kids that we come from apes.
Okay, Tim, the thing about the Islamic religion is they worship a different God. This is not the God of the Bible. And, of course, to them, Jesus Christ is not the Messiah at all. He is simply another one of the prophets. He certainly is nowhere near the stature of Muhammad. If you are a Christian, at least the traditional Christian belief is that Jesus Christ is God, in God incarnate. So we worship entirely different gods. Doesn't mean that a lot of Muslims can't be very nice people, but unfortunately it's leading them down the path to eternal damnation.
Well, who are we to become authoritative on religion, Dr.
Well, Tim, I'm not here to argue, but this is the Christian belief.
Now, well, you mentioned you, over
Tim,
100...
Tim, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Lord?
Oh, of course.
All right, fine. Then why are you arguing about the point?
Well, it seems a few minutes ago, it's paradoxical. You mentioned over 100,000 Iraqis are dead.
Right.
Now, who's responsible for those deaths? Not the Islam. America, the Anglo-Saxon man.
Well, who is responsible for it are the evil people who run our government.
And they're not Islamic.
My point, Tim, I don't want to get off on a long-winded discussion. The point I made was that men and women become accomplices to evils they fail to oppose, and they sure should be involved opposing what's going on. But we don't want to get off on a long discussion on religion. I personally believe that Christianity is the true faith. I believe that Jesus Christ is God incarnate, and the Muslim doesn't. And for that reason, I have to ask ourselves why it is that the Luciferians who run this society are inviting them here, are subsidizing them in our prisons, and, of course, are allowing these efforts to undermine the fabric of our society. And I think the answer should be self-evident. Okay, let's go on from there.
One of the, if I can just go on to one of the plans of Islam, and that it's very interesting that their plan is to have a high enough percentage of Muslims in a democratic society to use the election process to establish an Islamic republic.
Now, one man, one vote, one time, as it were.
Yes, and I think that this is their dawah, as they say it. It's a state of mind, a worldview, an attitude of life, a kind of life. And
and of course, if they are successful, then the America we know will cease to exist. So people can say, oh, we want everybody to have their right to religion. But you have to understand that once they are in a position of prominence, why, there will be no more religion, no more elections.
Yes,
so
you just have to go to the Arab countries to see that. And I think that Tim, is your last caller, is a little naive in saying that. I mean, just let's look at the way that Christians are treated in Arab countries. If you look at my film, The New Barbarians, and see that when a Muslim converts, he's killed and hung as a public spectacle on a lamppost for all to see that Muslims absolutely cannot convert to Christianity, whereas in this country we've got thousands of Christians converting to Islam through their strategy of conversion.
Well, I think people have to understand that what has happened in our country has happened on purpose. It was during the Vietnam War, while our attention was focused on what was happening over in Southeast Asia, that they changed the immigration laws. And they changed it in such a way that would actually encourage people from non-Christian nations to come here. Why? Because they wanted to destroy the infrastructure of our society. They create past laws that would actually make it very easy for the Muslims to come in, but not people from Christian countries. And so this was done intentionally to create this divided nation that they want. This is why they're not trying to close our borders.
Well, this book that I've got as my special this month by Dr. William Wagner on, is absolutely such essential reading.
Now, what is the book?
It's called How Islam Plans to Change the World. It's an absolutely incredible book. Dr. Wagner has been at the Fuller Theological Seminary. He's a professor of missions at the Golden Gate Baptist Theological Seminary and vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention. But he's served for 30 years in Muslim countries, lived in the Middle East and Africa, an absolute expert on Islam. And he was chairman of the Muslim Awareness Committee of the European Baptist Federation. And he's teaching on this now. And he is just incredible. And this book, to give your viewers some kind of insight, and even for you, Dr. Stan, I think you'll just see the incredible growth that the way that they are just moving into Europe and into America, and how Muslim it's a legal system. It's become part of the law of the land. I mean, it's just incredible the power that it has, and this book is just a wonderful expose, very easy reading, terrific research, and great facts about how Islam plans to change the world.
And do you know how to reach Dr. Wagner?
Yes, I'm carrying the copies, and he's a close friend of mine,
I'll interview him.
I'll
call you off the air, and we will certainly go ahead and get him onto our program.
Yes, and I interviewed him for the film that I'm making on Islam, and he's one of my leading interviews, and it's very, very knowledgeable man.
And I think that people have to understand, there's been an organized effort to encourage Islamic immigration into Europe and into England and into the United States. Now, why would our leaders do that? It really doesn't make any sense. Switzerland doesn't allow just anybody to come into their country. They don't want, of course, to change their culture. But there are people in key positions in both political parties, and specifically in the great tax-exempt foundations, who hate America because we were a Christian nation, and their intention is to destroy it. And when you understand that, everything that's going on today makes absolute sense. If you don't understand that, you're probably scratching your head and saying, why are we trying to change, to close the borders? Why won't they make English the official language of the United States? But when you understand the real agenda, why, of course, it's so blatantly obvious. We'll be right back to wrap up the program with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Carol with us for 3 more minutes. So why don't you go ahead and give your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, my goodness, my parting thoughts is to listen to you and see that, I feel that people like you and others that are trying to just let people help discern the times we live in. I mean, you know, that's the reason I get into the movies that I make and the books that I write and what I carry on my webpage, is to try and help people to discern the times we live in, to wake up, to be aware of what's happening, and to be involved in, preaching the good news of freedom to all those that we come in contact with. And, of course, freedom is only through Jesus Christ. And I know, having been somebody that, even though I was born and raised in India and saw the religions of Eastern thought and worldview, and I got involved in it. It's very seductive. It pulled you in. But ultimately, the only freedom and abundant life is in Jesus Christ, and that's what I live to tell. And I do it through my films and my books. But I'd encourage people to continue supporting you, listening to you, and go to my webpage, caryltv.com, CarylTV, and meet others that are very well informed experts that just know what's happening, get caught up, get educated on what's happening so that we can be lights in a world consumed with darkness.
And I agree with you totally. The most important thing, and the reason that I do what I do 5 hours a day, is to try to get people educated, to try to get them to be able to see things clearly, to try to understand what's wrong with the Muslim faith. There are a lot of nice people who are Muslims, but they worship a different God. And, of course, they want a different form of society. And, of course, once they're able to take control, that there will be no more elections. You'll live under Sharia law. And their desire here in the United States is to destroy our Constitution. Now, there may be some Muslims here who would like to, of course, live in our free society. But, of course, if they, being a Muslim, they will be told that if you don't go along with what's going on, we know where your relatives are. They're in Egypt or
in
Palestine. And they will, of course, you will be forced to go along with their agenda. And
you know, Dr. Stan, when 9/11 happened, the spokespeople for Islam said that jihad, holy war, was just part of the extremists and wasn't part of Islam. But
hold on, just a moment. Well, Carol was saying that, of course, when 9/11 happened, the Muslim leaders in America were saying, well, that was just a group of extremists.
That's not part of it.
Go ahead.
Jihad is such an essential part of the Islamic faith. I mean, Muslims must admit that jihad, as practiced by the extremists, violates several fundamental principles. But Christians must understand that the explanation of jihad is only an inner struggle. It's no longer valid. You know, we've got to take into account that the violent form of jihad is very much alive. Jihad forms an important part of Islam, and particularly Islam's search for world dominance. And that is very clearly portrayed in the film The New Barbarians, which you carry, showing how young children, how 10,000 children a year are being trained as little terrorist bombers and suicide bombers, because it's very important that Islam takes over the world. That's part of the strategy, part of Islam's threefold strategy, world dominance.
Well, we could go on for another 2 hours, but I'm going to have to let you go because we're out of time. God bless you. I will call you off the air and get
you
that Dr. Wagner's telephone number, because we'd like to get him on our program as well.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good
wonderful.
Night. God night.
Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye. All right, that was Carol Matriciana. And, of course, we do carry that New Barbarians. Now, don't confuse that with a tape set, which is called The New Order of the Barbarians. This is a video, The New Barbarians. It's basically a lot of footage that has actually appeared on Arab television. One of the most frightening things you've ever hoped to see. So we carry that. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set called Islam, the Religion of Doom. And you really need to know what the Islamic religion really teaches. We carry Craig Wynn's wonderful book, The Prophet of Doom. And, of course, it's the story of Muhammad and his writings and the writings. It's all taken from Islamic writings. You need to understand what we are up against. And then ask yourself, why are our leaders encouraging this here in this country? Why did they bring in all of the Muslims? Why did they have they allowed them to go into the prisons? And then, of course, all sorts of special privileges, because if you're a black in prison and you adopt the Muslim faith, you get special food, you get special time off to pray, you get all the month of Ramadan off. You don't have to work like the other prisoners do. Because, of course, we would never give the Christians that sort of treatment. So, special treatment for Muslims in prison, you have to ask yourself, why would those things be happening? Well, of course, as you begin looking into my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and understand the dark and sinister spirits and forces that are at work, all of it begins to make sense. So, once again, let me mention the books that we carry, certainly The Prophet of Doom, the four tape set, Islam, the Religion of Doom, the video of the New Barbarians. And we do carry other material on this subject, but this will certainly get you started. You'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the video, or the audio tape, or get all three of them. If you'd like a free copy of one of our I think our newsletters, we actually have my November newsletter, goes into the background of water fluoridation, how it's being used to poison our children, and of course to create cancer and to kill off our older people by getting their bones fractured, and then they die after they've fractured their hip. And they know that the incidence of hip fractures doubles in areas with water fluoridation. That's why they're putting the fluoride in the water, but they don't want you to know that. You need to get my November newsletter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our programs there live on the archives. You can get the list of books. You can read my newsletters. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products and other products as well. The Miracle 2 soap products, things of that sort. We do allow us to stay on the air and then pray for America. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, and may the Lord be with you.